Moncrief on News Talk.
You've disgraced yourselves again. This is the centenary of an infamous event when Irish prudishness went to war with art. The riots at the Abbey Theatre. Frank McNally from the Irish Times has been looking back at it. Good afternoon, Frank.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Now, this was the Plough in the Stars. In advance of the play opening, had there been any indications, any kind of unease with it or elements of it?
Well, I think there had been. There certainly there was a lot of anticipation. I know as I saw in the Irish Times, I think it was of December 1925, there were references to the play being in rehearsal. And because it was coming up, I guess the impending 10th anniversary of the Rising was in a lot of people's minds. And they knew O'Casey was writing this play. He was a rising star. He was well known. Those closer to the scene would have said in January there was some sort of tensions among the cast, people, actors, and also I think some of the people involved in running the Abbey Theatre were a little nervous about some of the content, specifically the inclusion of a prostitute character, Rosie Redmond, who would be the flashpoint in a lot of what happened later. I think there was a song, there was a planned song. I should say it's many years since I saw the film The Stars. It's coming up again shortly for the centenary. But as I remember, I think there was a song in the original that she sang, and I think they cut that because it was regarded as being in bad taste. But there was concern about that, and there were concern about individual lines. I think actors refused to speak certain lines. And O'Casey had to defend his corner, but he made cuts. So there was definitely a big sense of anticipation. And then when it opened, we're slightly ahead of the centenary. I was slightly ahead of it in writing about it. The official opening night was February the 8th. And by that time, it was packed out. Obviously, there would have been a lot of people invited to the opening night. So it was a kind of a VIP thing. But there were long queues down Abbey Street outside, and somebody said of the number of people queuing, only about a quarter actually got seats. So it was a hot ticket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd imagine. And was it a hot ticket because people knew in advance it might be controversial, or just because it was a great playwright commemorating the Easter Rising?
It was a well-known playwright, but I'm pretty sure the subject matter would have been anticipated to some extent. People probably had heard, people in the know would have heard, oh, O'Casey's play is going to create a bit of a stir, and there was still, I mean, 10 years after the Rising, it's still only, you know, a couple of years after the end of the, few years after the end of the War of Independence, the Civil War, there's still a lot of feelings would still be running high about the whole thing. Ireland's, you know, emerging into an uneasy qualified independence, so the play would have been a big statement about where the country was at that time.
Yeah. And the objection to it, was it just a taste and decency thing about the presence of Rosie Rosie and the heroes of 1916 sharing the same space?
Well, bizarrely to us, a lot of the trouble, yes, the Rosie Redmond thing caused a lot of trouble. The fact that she was a prostitute, she was sympathetically treated, and she's in there drinking in the pub with various IRA volunteers. The play is set, it runs over four acts. The first two acts, I think, are in 1915, as I recall, and that's about the preparations for the Rising. And then the third act is Easter week itself, and then I think the last act is later in Easter week. But a lot of the trouble revolved around a scene in Act 2 where it's set at a pub, there's a meeting going on outside, and we're given to understand that the speaker at this meeting is clearly an important man. It's probably Padraig Pearse himself. And then the volunteers come into the pub, and there was a lot of, bizarrely to us as a modern audience, there was a lot of unease about the fact that the volunteers who'd been attending this meeting by, you know, and listening to the sacred Padraig Pearse, that they brought the flag, the national flag, the tricolour, into the pub after. Just that alone was regarded as being the height of disrespect. And then the fact that there happened to be a prostitute there among the customers. One of the guy whose account of it, a man called Joseph Holloway, who had been to every Dublin play for about 50 years by all accounts, he loved the theatre, but he was very conservative and didn't like this play. He nevertheless went to every night of it, the opening run. It was a week-long opening run, and recorded in his diaries, which is one of the most valuable eyewitness accounts. And he contrasts. He obviously regarded the inclusion of a prostitute as being in bad taste, and he contrasted the fact the presentation of the sympathetic presentation of one on stage, of Rosie Redmond on stage, with the real life spectacle outside on the street of four real life Rosie Redmonds being chased away by police, and talked about how unedifying it was to come across this spectacle in real life, and he clearly didn't like to see it represented on the stage.
Uh-huh. And so how many nights had it been playing before trouble actually erupted?
Yeah, it's funny. In my column, I somewhat facetiously sort of compared the whole thing to the Easter Rising itself, which is like it's commemorated because they both started on a Monday, and the Monday was relatively quiet. I mean, it was packed out, and it got a great reception from the overwhelmingly positive reception. People were calling author. They wanted O'Casey on stage. There was a bit of grumbling, according to Holloway. There was a bit of grumbling among certain people that the state film censor, a man called James Montgomery, was there and was heard to say out loud that he was glad he wasn't on duty. Somebody else demurred at the state of the play. Then on Tuesday, again, it was mostly positive, but I think they'd added a couple of policemen to the doors of the pits, as they were called, the kind of standing area, in case that people might rush. There was a bit of grumbling happening. And it really took off on the Thursday night. That was when a lot of by then the word had got around what was involved, and it was decided. Some people decided this was an insult to the memory of the men of 1916, and specifically there was a big presence by the women, the mothers, the widowed wives, and sisters of the men of 1916. This was a big feature of politics in Ireland at the time. They were some of the people like Mrs. Pierce, the mother of the Pierce brothers, and Hannah Sheehy Skeffington, whose husband was shot by, killed by a mad British soldier during Easter week. They were among the most vociferous defenders of the memory of the dead. People used to refer, those on the other side of the debate used to refer to it as the rattling of bones. And, you know, they were saying, look, we have, you know, very well remembering all these people, but we have a country to run, and we have a new country to run, and there's a lot of problems. We need to move on a bit. But on the Thursday night, they were in the theatre and seemed to have taken a leading part in what was then, by then, that was like a wholesale. Most of the play went ahead. I think the first, even on Thursday night, the first act was uneventful, but then the second act happened. And like many riots, it probably wasn't entirely spontaneous. People had probably planned it in advance, but it ended up with members of the audience being on stage and getting thrown off the stage by actors. At some point, Barry Fitzgerald, who became famous later in Hollywood as he played, I've forgotten the character, but the quiet man, who's a brilliant sort of comic actor. He was playing Sleuther Good, the kind of trade unionist and hard-drinking Dubliner in this, and he himself got into a hand-to-hand fight with some guy on stage and threw him off. And in the midst of this, W.B. Yeats, in his role as director of whatever his official title was of the Abbey, he got up and made the now famous speech. He was referring back to the Playboy of the Western World riots, 1907, which had been a generation earlier, and he said in a famous phrase, or at least he's reported as having said in a famous phrase, "You have disgraced yourselves again." But whether anybody heard him at the time is a moot point, because it was so rowdy. Canny PR man that he was, he nipped around to the Irish Times later with a script or his version of events to make sure.
No better man. I let you go, Frank, there was Frank, one of our listeners, texted in to say that when Yeats called the play O'Casey's Apotheosis, but that but O'Casey didn't know what that meant and had to look it up in the dictionary afterwards.
Yeah, to be honest, I'd have to look it up myself again. O'Casey was eventually, and soon afterwards, was it because of the, I have to remind myself of this, I think it was over the play called The Silver Tassie, he was driven into exile. The Abbey, I think it was, they refused the Silver Tassie unless it was a later play. I'm a little bit murky on the details of that, but he ended up moving to England because he thought, because even the Abbey had lost patience with him. Yeah. A lot of his critics would say his later plays weren't that great, good, and even some of the earlier ones.
Frank, we have to leave it there, I'm afraid. Thanks a million for reminding us of that story. That was Frank McNally there from the Irish Times.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.